Hello, everyone. The caliper call just got over, so I'm waiting for a couple of minutes before we start this. And how are you? So if you're not talking, you put yourself on mute, because otherwise there will be interference. And I don't want to be a dictator and get everybody muted. So anyway, this week's call, the agenda is pretty light. We haven't had many people we haven't had too many people coming up with agenda items. So I took the liberty of inviting Daniel Bloom to present on the Implementers Working Group, which is the Identity Implementer Working Group, which meets every other Thursday, which is not this, you know, staggered. In other words, there won't be a meeting this week, but there will be a meeting next week. And right now we just have a few people here. And I'll wait for another, let's say, a couple of minutes. And then we'll start. Welcome, everyone. Can you guys hear me?
Yep, you're good.
Yep.
All right, we start with the antitrust notice, which is up on the screen. Basically, it is a law intended to stimulate competition, and we ask. The only thing we ask is that you, if you do not agree with this this notice, then please do not continue with the meeting. So by continuing with the meeting, you are agreeing to this notice. The basic idea of this meeting is to talk about all things concerning identity. It's more of a general meeting about identity related topics in Hyperledger specifically, and also if there are developments that are outside Hyperledger that we talk about those. So we start off with a round of introductions, very short introductions. First one to go would be me. I would say that my name is Vipin Bharathan. I am the chair of the Identity Working Group, and I'm also involved in many other activities with Hyperledger, and I have a company called DLT.NYC, which is an enterprise blockchain consulting company. And I'm involved with both the enterprise side in terms of my interests for about 30 years in financial organizations and media companies and other places where I have worked as a developer. And of late, I have been trying to develop my skills on all things blockchain. So I'm involved not only in the technical, but the governance, the crypto economic theory, the behavioral science theory behind blockchain. And I would ask if you guys want to continue, please introduce yourself, and I can suggest some names.
Let me introduce myself, Vipin. Would you be able to hear me? This is Kumar Vel. I am working in Hyperledger Fabric project as a POC level with Ford. And I joined this meeting mainly to understand the identity part, because myself, I'm exploring how the identity works in the blockchain. Thank you.
Hi, this is Shantanu, and I am the blockchain CEO of Mindtree. Work with the food supply chain a platform, which is there in production working. And what I'm looking for this group is how to implement this digital identity thing in any of the platform. So that's my purpose of this, joining this community. Thank you.
Daniel, you want to go?
Sure, yeah. So my name is Daniel Bloom. I am a software engineer for the Sovereign Foundation. I'm pretty heavily involved in the Hyperledger Aries project, as well as the Indie project. Happy to be here. Happy to be involved in the Identity Working Group.
Randy.
Hi. Being kind of on and off.
Go ahead, introduce yourself. Tell us why you're interested. It's not, I know that you've done this before, but just for the sake of the others who are on the call.
As far as identity, I'm currently working with the entertainment industry, which is ETC Group. We are looking at how to use consortium-based identity to authenticate contractors and production workers that are moving from one studio to the next.
Identity is something
very important. You're breaking up, Randy. Maybe if you speak directly into the microphone, we might be able to hear you better.
Yeah, it's my PC on, and maybe I need to switch to a landline. This is still pretty bad.
Yeah, if you have something longer to say about this, then it'd be great if you switch to a landline, especially later on in the conversation if you want to get involved in talking about stuff.
Let me switch to a landline if you guys can continue.
Yeah, and what I know about Randy, other stuff I know is that he works for Cisco, I think, probably uses the Cisco blockchain or is familiar with the Cisco blockchain. And that's as much as I know about him. And there is another person who has joined with the number 14254452487. And I don't know who that is. If you want to talk about yourself and why you are on this call and what interests you and what are you working on, you know, that would be great. 142-544-52487. I guess not. If you're talking, you're on mute, by the way.
Yeah, sorry, I'm in a car. This is Steve McGinnis.
Steve, welcome. So there's another person now. Oh, that might be Randy calling in. Anyway.
Yeah, just going back through the line. I hope this is better.
Yeah, it's much better. Anyway, if you have more to say, please say what you have to say, and then we can go to the rest of the agenda items.
Yeah, maybe I say a few more things, and just kind of lost during there. So while we are working with, at least personally, working with the entertainment industry, we have a working group. It is sponsored by the etc.org. They are looking at how to leverage the distributed identity for the movie studios and production studios, how to leverage that distributed identity moving as a contractor is moving from one studio to the next so that they can leverage and they don't have to redo the authorization, authentication all over again every time.
So it's a shared KYC type situation.
Yeah, we're looking at like a consortium-based identity. It's going to be owned by the entire consortium members, and the contractors can join that. And even if they finish a project from one studio, they can move to the next studio, and that information is being kept on the blockchain. Right now, is individual organizations have all this that go through the same process over and over again.
Yeah, maybe you can make use of people who have thought about this a lot, and you know, like the Indie Project or Uport or any of those others, because there are obviously strictures against keeping stuff, the PII, on the blockchain, and you know about that, I think. Anyway, so the next, you know, thing on the agenda is the presentation by the Identity Working Group Implementers Call report by Daniel Blum.
Yeah, so a quick sound check. You guys can hear me, right?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. So just as, I guess, a brief review of what exactly the Implementers Call is, it's a call to coordinate status and dependencies between several different projects working on verifiable credentials and identity components. So this past week, for instance, we got status updates from the Hyperledger Indie projects, Hyperledger Ares, Ursa. We also had some updates on governance frameworks and trust architecture from Drummond Reed, and also updates from the W3C verifiable credentials and DID spec side of things. So I'm not really sure how much detail I should go into right now, but there are a lot of things going on in each of those projects, releases coming up in Indie, as well as Ares on multiple sides. In Hyperledger Ursa, the Anon Creds 2.0 work is advancing well, and we are looking forward to the continuation of that work. Yeah, and then we also briefly talked about some external projects to those just to keep in mind as we work on these identity solutions, such as the Solid Project, secure data hubs from Digital Bazaar and others. So we also saw a demo from Stephen Gubler of the Sovereign Foundation about the GitLab CI/CD migration for the Hyperledger Indie project, which was very instructive, and we're looking forward to those changes. I guess just as another kind of review for those that haven't attended the implementers call yet, the implementers call is really for some of the more lower level technical discussions, whereas obviously on this call we stay at a higher level, are able to discuss more of the concepts rather than the nitty-gritty details. This next week, so we were off this week and we'll be meeting next week on Thursday at, I believe, let's see, it's 3 p.m. UTC, 8 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. We'll be discussing Hyperledger Indie performance testing. And that's our main topic. We'll also have time for open discussion as well. So are there any questions I can answer for you guys?
Well, I mean, I think what is important here is that all of these items are tied together in a certain way, in the sense that, for example, the governance frameworks that Drummond is talking about will have some interaction with the CI/CD work that was presented, because more and more the compliance and regulators are looking for this kind of integrated approach to safety, which means the CI/CD work, the continuous integration, continuous development work is essential, because it shows a pipeline from from code to putting it into testing and subsequently into production. All of that is demonstrated in the pipeline. Now, why is that important in a governance framework? Because that is definitely one aspect of governance and will be looked upon by the compliance folks. So this is the thing that we want to emphasize here, which is the connections between all of these things and how that plays into privacy, meaning is there code that was put into place that would somehow reveal your private details to the external world? What is the test coverage for that? All of that will be looked at, so it is important to know that even the KYC considerations, like for example, Randy, you're saying that you have a consortium identity that will be shared between the various participants of the consortium of the contractors. They will need assurances, maybe not in the detail of CI/CD, but they will need something saying, here is what we are doing to protect and to safeguard the new code that is coming into the system. And here is what we are doing to monitor or to keep things, without being broken into, for preserving the identity, preserving the privacy, preserving the various aspects of the attributes of the contractor's ID that is being shared among the consortium members. So, I just want to emphasize that we do not exist in independent silos as much as we would like to think that we do. And one of the jobs of the identity working group is to bring to light these connections. In other words, fostering a kind of a systems thinking approach to this whole problem, so that, you know, we are able to answer questions on many levels. And people, of course, who want to delve into those questions can do so by talking to the experts like Danny. So that's my 2 cents, or maybe just about 20 cents on that. But
I think that you raise a very good point on the privacy and the security of the identity, because if you're trying to convince people to put security into the system, and they have to be ensured that it's going to be used securely, it's going to not going to be leaked, or it's going to be protected, and it's going to be used for a good purpose, I think a lot of these questions are going to come up.
So in the, you know, essentially the integrity of the whole process from the beginning to the end, meaning putting stuff in testing, in deployment, how is it automatically tested? That is the focus of what the pipeline was talking about, in the implementer's call. And of course, we need to go further, like how is the new code going to be put into production? And also, of course, the things like verifiable claims and other means of securing the information, not exposing the PII on the blockchain, methods that are come up by people like Solid, the hubs, the secure hubs, the W3C's, DID specs, everything plays into the integrity of the system. Anyway, Danny, do you have anything more to add to that?
No, I think that was some good discussion on how indeed these are all very interconnected aspects. So I'm happy to go into more detail on any of those topics if anybody would like. Otherwise, yeah, just happy to answer questions.
Anybody else has questions? I guess not. I'm frankly interested in the governance framework discussion by Drummond, and I'm planning to invite him here to give a talk on that, or in the capital markets SIG, because there is governance framework that he wants to specifically address the financial markets. Now, anyone else has any other comments or questions right now? We'd be happy to have a discussion on those.
Vipin, is anybody looking at how to leverage the distributed identity for political processes, like voting and a lot of that stuff? Because that would be really significant.
Danny is more a better place to answer that question. I know that there are several use cases today for Indy and DIDs in general, specifically about voting. Danny might be able to answer. Otherwise, we'll have to look at the independent voting in the sense of voting in a consortium, voting in a consensus method, voting as in a democratic process. All of these are different dimensions, I assume.
Yeah, absolutely. There will be a huge application for that.
Yeah, just to add on to that, I think today the Hyperledger Indie project, I think we've had some discussion surrounding how we could enhance the voting process in a digital age. I'm not sure that as many people have specifically targeted the actual voting process itself. However, using verifiable credentials and the agent standards being developed inside of the Hyperledger Ares project, voting can be significantly augmented and improved. For instance, rather than, I'll backpedal a little bit and try that again. So using verifiable credentials, you can, for instance, verify that you are a citizen of whatever country or state that you're voting in digitally without having to present that in person to some officer or something like that. I think it opens up a lot of possibilities, and I'm sure others have probably explored some of those possibilities much more than I have. I think that's definitely an area that can be greatly improved by some of the work going on in the Hyperledger identity community.
Because of the significance, Daniel, I think would it be appropriate to have just separate set of people looking at that use case? Because I think it has just so much significance in terms of application. It has a lot of its own unique requirements as well, right? There will be legal, political, a lot of these unique requirements.
Yeah. Hey, this is Steve. One of the things that is kind of interesting that seem to be separate tracks right now, but honestly may merge, and I think this is kind of alluded to, when we talk about voting, there's sort of the use case of, as you said, the democratic process, I want to vote for my representative or what have you. But then within a distributed system, a consortium, there's also this layer of voting in terms of who gets to stay in the consortium, who gets to go out, when are rules changed, and so forth. I think there's probably a lot more focus on that right now from a technical perspective, right? Once you have a distributed application set up, what is the mechanism for a consortium of voting? But I think there's absolutely a layer on top of that in terms of the governance as to how that voting works and why it works and what the structure and the legal basis is and so forth. So I think there's a couple interesting pivots on that.
Yeah, definitely. Seems like a very area that's ripe. However, for the democratic process, I did attend a Real World Crypto in San Francisco about 3 or 4 months ago, and there was somebody who was vehemently opposed to using blockchain for voting. And also, of course, their rationale was based on, as usual, incomplete understanding of what a blockchain could be. They always brought it down to the Bitcoin and proof of work and how transactions cannot be scaled and so on and so forth. So there's always that discussion going on, and but there are also plenty of skeptics who are completely against using blockchain for democratic voting, maybe based on some incomplete understanding, but they're there. And these are very influential guys. This guy was a professor from Georgetown Law School who had worked in the electoral process. His other complaint was that it is all elections are local processes in the sense they have to be implemented on a local level. And how are you going to create uniform infrastructure where basically the local level to the top level can be integrated into the same or similar blockchain system so that you can actually, I mean, one of the most important things is, of course, finding out who won and that people did not cast votes twice or, you know, all those things. So this has been a, you know, very hot topic because, you know, they also thought that the voting machines that are being used today have multiple sort of security holes and possibly have been tampered with, subverting the processes. Anyway, so it looks like Adam Stallard has joined also the call. This is a, like Randy, like you said, it's a Randy and Daniel, you both said that, complicated. But I get Steve's point, which is how do you have voting in technical terms? That means even for upgrading the system, like for example, I want to put in a new code. Do all the members of the consortium agree? You know, those kind of things. Adam looks like, anyway, so it's a very broad subject, I think. Anyone else?
Yeah, definitely.
Anything
yeah.
to say about this?
I think it's definitely, it is a very big topic. I think there's a huge potential for the application. There's a lot of dollars going to be can be invested on this thing if this shows potential, right? But I think answer your early concerns, I think there should be a technical side of it, understanding what the technical requirements, how to get it done, and there will be the legal political ramifications, which we can do that in terms of layers, like the identity system we're talking about today, right? There will be layers. There will be a layer of blockchain. There will be layers of identity system. There will be layers of applications, agents, all that. And the bottom layer could be used anywhere and if it has many of the features. And then you build some of the top layers for specific customer locale or the specific cities, and then you can adapt to that requirement in a local and perhaps pilot that solution in a very small place and implement like a city council vote, that kind of level, and the consequences are much more limited.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have to crawl before we can walk and walk before we can run. I will put on the Identity Working Group Rocket Chat a reference to the talk that, you know, by a skeptic, that the skeptic of blockchain. You know, blockchain, you know, there have been lots of people objecting to the use of blockchain everywhere. It's blockchain fatigue and also blockchain, let's say, misunderstanding of what exactly is a blockchain, or at least an understanding that is colored only by one or two of the public blockchains that are out there. And as you know, one of the main differences between a public and the permission blockchain is the use of identities for running the permissioned nodes and how to govern that. And in fact, the Architecture Working Group had created a system identities paper which is almost complete. But since here in our Identity Working Group call, we are concerned not only with the system identity, so-called system identity, meaning the identity of the nodes or of the delegates who run the nodes, and also of the transactor's identity, identity of people or things, which, you know, we'll come to in the IoT topic, that, you know, that transact on the blockchain. So, today the agenda is very thin. I have the following items, and I can share the items with you. Let me share my screen of the agenda. Some of them are more fully formed than others. Okay. And I, as far as Adam goes, we do want to discuss Libra identity at some point. That's always been one of the items that that I wanted to discuss. So I'm going to share the agenda items that I have here. So we've already gone through the first two, and then of course we went on a tangent on the voting stuff. The SI-SIG and the Identity Working Group collaboration, SI is the social impact, SIG, and the Identity Working Group collaboration, which is meant to be Andre Bonifacio, has, he hasn't said yes anyway, so that will probably be moved to the next week. And implementing metrics from Chaos, which is a group in Linux Foundation that looks at diversity and other metrics in participation. As you know, we have had a problem with diversity, gender diversity specifically, and geographic diversity probably. So we wanted to implement some of the metrics just to do measurement of participants using the mailing list, using other methods like a survey or something else. What do you guys think about this? I mean, it seems to be a hot topic. I'm not saying that it's not important, but there are things you can affect, and there are things you probably have no control over, but we do want to be a welcoming place. Is anybody have anything to say about it? I guess not. Anything else before we jump into the Identity Working Group paper, the sticking points? Okay, so in the Identity Working Group paper, there are a couple of sticking points. One is the section on Aadhaars that seems to have received a lot of criticism because it was felt that it was written by the people who are proponents of Aadhaar. I don't know whether you know much about Aadhaar. Aadhaar is the digital identity system put in place by the government of India and presumably has the largest number of people signed up directly or indirectly through this scheme, because it has more than around 1 billion users. The problem is Aadhaar has become a vector for surveillance sometimes, but there are many moves to limit this privacy busting surveillance capabilities of Aadhaar, and they are making many changes. But in our paper, you know, we need to present a balanced view. Some people are objecting to the fact that Aadhaar has been depicted as a success. If anybody else has anything to say on that topic, I'll be glad to hear it.
Yeah, I have a question. I've been looking into that a little bit. My understanding is that it's still a voluntary program. Is that true?
It is in theory. The problem is
in theory. Right?
In theory, because it's like a social security number. Like, I can go to a bank and try to get an account set up in the United States without giving them my social security number, which in theory should be possible. But the problem is the bureaucrats or the people who have created the systems assume that social security number is a requirement. In the beginning, I had success in not giving social security number, but by now, it's almost impossible not to. You have to fight with them for a long periods. It's like the flight. You know, if you're going into an airport, you have that scanning machines. In theory, you're supposed to be able to say, "I don't want my body to be scanned." In which case, they will put you through the ringer. They will actually pull you out of the line, do lots of very invasive searches, and create, you know, a lot of obstacles in your way that you basically, for convenience, you will say, forget about it, I'm going to opt in. So a similar situation has arisen in Aadhaar.
Yeah, that's helpful. I for some reason I thought it was sort of the other way around, that because it was optional, it wasn't being implemented quite as broadly as they would like. But it sounds like it's just the opposite, that the the various people who want that information are insisting upon it, pretty much forcing people to sign up. Is that more accurate?
Yes. In fact, the abuse got to a certain level that now they are putting in this thing called the consent layer, where the consent has to be actively recorded before anybody can gather any information about it. It's actually quite comprehensive setup. But every time there's this stuff, suddenly, like for example, two or three weeks ago, they tried to put in a healthcare system, a comprehensive healthcare system in India, which requires you to enter your Aadhaar number. And God knows what that is going to create, because now you have linkability. Now you have linkability between your medical records and your other, your public identity. Unless they keep that hidden away, that's going to be a problem. So I have referred to all of this in the paper. So take a look at the Aadhaar section. I will rework some of it and send it out on the, on your email list or Rocket Chat. So I have two jobs. One is putting the skeptics' arguments against against voting systems. Two is to complete the Aadhaar section. I hoped that some people who had written the Aadhaar section, who are basically people who had worked on it from India, would be on this call so that we could thrash out some of these differences. Anybody else has any comments on this? This is the problem with the national security systems anyway. So I want to hear, national digital identity systems.
I'm sorry, what is the problem with them?
The problem is that once you set up such a system, then if there are not enough controls right from the get-go, then all of these private companies who depend on that information start demanding more and more of you, and then try to, you know, basically the privacy is lost.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I mean, the phrase Hobson's choice has come up in many conversations I've had in the last several months. You know, effectively, it's a choice that's really not a choice. If you want to avail yourself of the services, you have to provide whatever information is requested. Otherwise, you don't get it. And I think that's a conversation that I haven't heard a lot of people having. And we were talking about these things about how I have my personal data and I control it and I can release it and I'm aware of it, and that's all good. But if every time I use something I have to release more information than is warranted, then that's a limited goodness, if you will.
Yeah, so only two things are going to prevent it, right? One is when somebody says, I want X, Y, Z, and so on, pieces of information from you, not only do they have to ask you for that information, but they have to prove that they need it in some way. If there's regulation around that or a collective action around that, that is going to limit the amount of information that they ask for. That's the first thing. Second is, once you release this information, that information is stored somewhere, right? And that information is sort of toxic to companies today. Because if you think about it, people like Experian, people like Yahoo, all of whom have lost, in the billions, really, pieces of information about people. So they should really be fined, or if they find that the information is not properly secured or being released, So the two ends: one is limit the amount of information. Two is make them the true guardians of that information if they need to be. And I think there is movement across the globe around this. Even in Aadhaar, there is that movement because of Supreme Court involvement. Anyway, so Steve, do you think we should have a section in the document that covers this? Because nobody, like you said, nobody really talks about it.
Well, I think it's an important conversation. And again, I think you're spot on that when it comes to personally identifiable information, as opposed to things like, what I purchase on Amazon or where I drive with Google Maps or whatever, that the guardrails, if you will, it seems almost have to be installed by the local government or the national government. It's something that I'm not sure that the system per se can really drive. You know, we can certainly provide the guardrails and the mechanisms for what information we want to release and when and how and to whom. But unless there's that other piece, which is more a social issue of, you know, a regulation saying you can't request more than you need, or if you have personal identifiable information, you're now liable for that. That falls completely outside the system, but I think it's a very important part of the systems that we design.
Well, you might, actually there are laws that are coming into being. Of course, GDPR, which does impose tough penalties. and there is the there is the role of a data steward who becomes almost personally liable. The other
CCA,
The other is the CCA. Yeah, California is adopting a lot of the same methods. New York is coming up with this similar proposal or even more stringent proposal. So, and in India, like I said, they are coming up with this consent layer, especially for spam. You know, you have to prove that you opted in rather than opted out to get message delivery on your cell phone, because the cell phone number is a PII that is stored as part of the Aadhaar record. This is, you know, I mean, there are a lot of conversations to be had around this. I think in the Identity Working Group paper, I'm going to put in some of these ideas. Obviously, we cannot be comprehensive because of the fact that, you know, it has to be a paper that is digestible, maybe not more than 30 or 40 pages. If it goes beyond that, no one will ever read it. It'll be like the Mueller report, you know. Anyway.
You didn't read the Mueller report?
Well, I am crazy, so I might, you know, I would have read them. You know, I read part of it, so.
Truth comes out.
Yeah, but the problem is not everybody is OCD like me. Anyway, so anybody else has any thoughts on this particular topic? Because we want to put that into the paper. I guess not. The other part is the paper. Marta Piekarska, who's a Linux Foundation person, wants to bring the paper to the Rebooting Web of Trust meeting and have people work on it so that we can get more input from a wider range of folks. What do people think about that?
I think that sounds like a really good idea to let those folks in on it.
Okay, great.
I'm still digesting that paper myself. I'm pretty new to.
Yeah, the paper is
groups, but really interesting. Like this is the first time I read this section on Aadhaar, very interesting what you have in there, and just the whole paper in general.
Yeah, what you know, the paper is complete in parts. It's very spotty. We want an integrated approach. Actually, what's the name? Kelly Cooper has been editing the paper, copy editing the paper. So it is it's looking much better than it was before. And it's a very complicated piece of work, you know. So anyway, I think we're going to end the meeting, and next time we will have a real section on Libra and identity system. Do you want to talk about that, Adam, or?
I don't know anything about it. That's why I want to talk about it. I just saw that cryptic sentence in their paper that said, oh, and by the way, Libra is going to include a decentralized identity as that we leave it open to the association to create this decentralized identity. And I thought, and then, you know, there's people speculating about it, but I was wondering if anyone had any real knowledge about that. So it is interesting to me.
Well, actually, there is, I'm working on a piece on the technical aspects of Libra for Medium, and I will, I'm looking into all aspects of it, including the consensus algorithm, the network, the other, the identity parts. And if I have any more information on the identity part alone, I will make a presentation here.
Great.
And let's, I think they claim it's going to be pseudonymous, just like the Bitcoin. For the transactors, but it's got to be on a different level for the participants because they have a permissioned ledger, right?
Yeah.
So then.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just when I think of Facebook, I think of them pulling together all kinds of little bits of data on people, and so you can say it's pseudonymous, but then if you're linking bits of data about people and you're not being careful about it, that could be really bad. So I'm really interested in hearing what this is all about. If it's anything like Facebook ID, then it's going to be bad. So hopefully this is something completely different.
Yeah, but this danger exists even today. Forget Facebook. They had said that even if you have aggregated pieces of data, like for example, you live in zip code X, you own a car, you completely disconnected pieces of information coming through aggregations. Like, if they say in this zip code there are 10,000 car owners. And then you have another dimension, which is, you went to the hospital, whatever. So they have all these different ways in which you can be de-anonymized using even the aggregated data. And it doesn't have to be people like Facebook. There's already data out there that can be used to de-anonymize you. In fact, I listened to a very interesting talk on data mining, in which the guy had a tool on a website, and if you just put in like three things or four things, it's a probabilistic thing, right? I mean, they'll say you can identify the 70% probability. Then you add one more piece of data, and then it's suddenly 99%. I think that too. The tool. So the only protection against all this is that we are able to make this a crime, and then have tough penalties for it for doing this kind of stuff.
I agree.
Because the data is already out there. Anyway, I stop now. And we have dwindled down to three. I hope I wasn't too boring. And I find myself talking a lot in this particular call, and I don't want to do that.
Well, for what it's worth, I found it interesting. I only came in during the last half, but I enjoyed what I heard.
All right, thank you. And I'm going to end the call right now.
All right. Nice talking to you.
Hi.
Bye.
Hello.
Thank you. We're ending the call, Dave.
Oh, okay. Great.
But I thought you guys were going to use the backup thing.
Maybe so. I've been, if Dan changed it, maybe I just didn't see a note. Oh, it does. Sorry. Yes. All right. It looks like it got changed. Okay, I'll jump to that. Sorry about that.
No problem.